Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. And today on the program, we want to talk about what I would call the strange and troubling case of Jerome Bichimumpaka. Mr. Bichimumpaka was a Rwandan diplomat in 1994 at the time of the assassination of the president, the subsequent war and massacres that took place, and the United Nations established a tribunal when Jerome Bichimumpaka was brought to Arusha and had a trial and was acquitted. He was acquitted in 2011, and it is 2021, and Mr. Bichimumpaka remains in Tanzania. His family is in Canada, and we want to know how this could be that an acquitted man remains in a kind of, I guess we'll use the word limbo. And to find out, we're going to speak to Cedric Bichimumpaka, who is the son of Jerome. And Cedric, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Phil. Thanks for having me here tonight. It's a real pleasure.
Well, it's our pleasure. We think it's a very important story. And to begin with, give us your account of why we are in the situation we are today with your father.
Well, first and foremost, we're here today because it's been 23 years that I've been separated from my father for who's an innocent man. And my mom raised me and my little sister alone. She always told us that Canada was a country where rights are respected, and also a place where we have a chance to realize our dream. And as Phil just said, my father was arrested in 1999 by the United Nations, especially what they call the International Court Tribunal for Rwanda, the ICTR. That same tribunal acquitted him of all charges 12 and a half years later in 2011.
12 years it took to get the trial completed.
Yes.
Phenomenal.
And the whole time he was also he was in prison. They called it preventative imprisonment. And it's been also ever since 10 years now later, we're still asking Canada to allow our father, or in this case, my father, to be reunited with me and my mom and my sister in Canada, which is our homeland now.
Mm-hmm. Well, why is it even a problem? I don't understand it. You can't underline it enough. He was acquitted. And people who are acquitted resume their lives. So what sort of response do you get? Have you been approaching the various governments, Canada? I understand you've also perhaps been speaking to Belgium. But the UN has the prime responsibility to protect and return your father to freedom, don't they, to his family.
They do. It's part of what was agreed during the Security Council and all its members, that they were to reinstate all the acquitted and try to give them back their freedom and reunite them with their families. Now, us being in Canada, the normal choice would be Canada, which we did the application and we passed all the different steps which are required. And we ended up having a negative response. That was in May 2018, where they claimed, so basically his application for permanent residence was denied under Section 35(1)(b) of the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act. Because my father was, which I didn't specify much, Phil, let me put it in context a bit what my father did in Rwanda. My father was his education background was an economist, and he when he returned to Rwanda in 1991, and he was doing some business, but he was also an active member of the opposition party. And in 1994, April 9, 3 days after the plane was our previous president was shut down, they basically, he started becoming the foreign affairs minister. That was after signing the Arusha treaties. So him, since he was a foreign affairs minister of Rwanda, of the interim government for 3 months, because he was from April 9 to July 1994. The government is considered by the Minister of Public Security to be a regime that engaged in various crimes against humanity. Therefore, he is not accepted and not allowed to set foot in the country, in Canada. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to say here is, despite the fact that this man, who was a foreign affairs minister for 3 months, mm-hmm. spent 23 years fighting for his freedom.
Yes.
Was fully acquitted by the United Nations, which is the biggest international body that exists, which Canada is a member of. Mm-hmm. We're still receiving a negative response. Mm-hmm. We did ask also the public security minister, we wrote him a letter, which mm-hmm. 3 years later, we still haven't heard of.
No response
from the ministry. But again,
did you write it? Was it a private capacity or did a lawyer? I mean, I don't understand how they cannot answer. So a lawyer sent it.
Mm-hmm. A lawyer sent it.
Mm-hmm.
What outraged me the most is the fact that, again, I grew up, it's been 23 years I've been in Canada. I finished my elementary school, I did my high school, all my post-secondary education here. And this country has shown me how they're able to uphold the law and how we're able to be a country with human rights. Mm-hmm. And also how family is so important in our culture and in our society. And what frustrates me every time I try to look at it as in any angle I look at it is, how can this country still not be okay with, first of all, a Canadian citizen now being reunited with his own father, when his own father is 100% innocent.
Innocent and has spent 20 years in prison.
20 years
while,
in prison.
While being innocent and shown to be innocent in a courtroom.
Yes.
Yes. By the way, we're speaking to Cedric Bichimumpaka, son of Jerome Bichimumpaka, who is in Arusha and fighting for his rights. It's a humanitarian case. It's a case of international justice, and my opinion, I'm sure others share it. By the way, there is an element we need to add. I'm sorry I didn't raise it immediately. Your father has a health question.
Yes.
And he's up against fighting cancer, but also fighting an artificial deadline set for him by this the remnant of what had been the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, one time called the MICT and now called the Mechanism. But this is a UN agency. Your father's has cancer and he's receiving treatment. Tell me how this plays into what we're talking about.
Yes. So, unfortunately, in June of this year, we discovered that my father had cancer or have cancer. Ever since, he's been receiving treatment. Since he's under the UN care responsibility, they were able to send him to Kenya in Nairobi, where he was able to get proper care for his cancer treatment. He was overall in the hospital on and off about for 4 months, hospitalized. Mm-hmm. He's due to go back in January for more tests and more treatment. And what happened is recently, this mechanism, which is the International Residual Mechanism for Criminal Tribunals, the IRMCT, that decided to offer him and other people that were in the same situation as him, but the choice to go to Niger in exchange of, I will make it very simple. You go to Niger, you willingly relieved us being the UN of all responsibility, and we give you $10,000 to feed yourself, rent a place, take care of all your healthcare expenses. Don't forget that those are men who are all at retirement age. They won't be able to work. This was offered and presented to them as an option, right? It's you going there willingly, and you have signed a document. And my father refused because of his health condition, because they never presented that, okay, you can't go to your appointment in January to the hospital where you've been treated, but we're shipping you to another country. We won't be taking care of you anymore. And by the way, here's where the care that you're able to get, proper care you're able to get, where we're sending you. They never did that.
So they don't assume any responsibility for guaranteeing that there would be care of equal quality in Niger. Yes. That becomes a problem of the man that they were holding for 20 years, who was innocent and acquitted.
Yes.
They open the back door of the building and say goodbye. This is the United Nations.
Yes, the United Nations. They're giving him two options, death or death, basically, because right now you were talking about the deadline or the ultimatum they gave him. Pretty much they said, since you don't want to go to Niger, we're revoking all your privilege, which is housing, food, healthcare, such as cancer treatment, since you didn't want to go to Niger. As, again, his right of residence on Tanzanian soil, because he's on Tanzanian soil because of the UN. And now the UN is saying, you didn't want to go to Niger, so we're revoking all those rights, all those privileges. That's why I really put the emphasis on the fact that he's given two options. It's you either die or you die again.
Yes. It is so bizarre, and it does call up images of Kafka stories that I don't understand, that there, over the years, there has been occasionally some feeble work done, which has led to some individuals being transferred to other countries and even some to with their families. I don't see how the UN can sort this out as to individual cases. Their responsibility is for, they put your father in the circumstance he's in. And,
yes.
And to say, well, we tried doesn't get it. It's their job. I don't understand why they aren't the ones writing and knocking on the door of the Canadian individuals that they would have to contact. That's their job, and they should be knocking very loudly. And same in Belgium or wherever it is that your father would be in a position to rejoin his family. I mean, actually, we were talking about criminal matters. I would think that this is almost opens to a lawsuit. How can they treat someone like this?
I think it's because they're not being accountable. I think they do these deals behind closed doors. Even when they offered this Niger deal with my dad, luckily my mom was there with him. But they had told them to not tell anybody, not even their family members, right? They're trying to get them and coerce them into signing things without them informing any family members. And I truly believe that the only way to keep them honest is to make them accountable. And that's why I'm here today, because I believe, Phil, that if people don't speak up, these things are going to keep happening. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I would have waited 23 years, and maybe I can wait another 2-3 years, and I would never be reunited with my father.
Yes. Again, this is Cedric Bichimumpaka, son of Jerome Bichimumpaka, who was acquitted in the year 2011. He remains in a limbo world, but also one with the doors closing. There is an additional matter that has been raised. That is, your father, in his letters, I've seen one of them at least, he said that they haven't assisted him in obtaining a passport. He is, of course, a Rwandan national, but he is a refugee. He would be a refugee from the current regime, which has a rather nasty reputation. He hasn't been able to obtain his passport. So this creates, a situation where countries who might be open to dealing with him couldn't, because he doesn't have the papers. Am I right?
Yes. It complicates things, because even if we want him to be here, we still need either the UN to give him a document of travel document for one way for him to be able to join us, or we need him to have a passport, which right now the UN is dropping all his privileges, so we won't even be able to claim that one-way passport, even if Canada was to say yes, or we won't be able to use any travel document because he doesn't have it.
Yeah.
But most importantly, you have to understand, it's something that we usually take for granted. When you don't have any legal status in a country, you can't work, you can't rent a place, you can't even have a cell phone, right? All these things that we were able to do so freely, we're not able to do. There's nothing worse than having to take care of a family member, in this case is my father, from a distance. I'm here in Canada and he's all the way in Tanzania battling for cancer, which means for his life, alone, right? And we've been waiting. We're growing tired, and especially feeling powerless.
Mm-hmm. It's really remarkable. But I noticed too, what is really pains a person to read is that they actually do not dispute any of your father's points.
They don't. They just ignore
that. When he says, I need specific treatment, which I am receiving in Nairobi, and therefore I need to either have that or some guarantee of the equivalent, they don't respond. It's like, well, that's your problem. They're the ones holding him for 20 years. I keep coming back to this is Cedric Bichimumpaka, son of Jerome. And tell us how your family has dealt with this, how difficult your own experience and what you've all been put through, because not only your father is in a suffering situation.
Yes, for us, it's been, I would say it's been a very difficult, especially at a young age, when you are a young child and you hear that your father has been arrested of crime against, charge of crime against humanity. It's not an easy thing, right? People ask you, where is your father? And you have to find an excuse. You can't say the truth, right? But when you're a child, you're taught to say the truth. So you have to, when you didn't know me, I wasn't going to tell you that my father was in jail. I didn't want you to judge me that negatively. I'm talking about my personal experience here. So like I always say here, when you don't know me and somebody asks me, I ask them, well, he's working in Africa. Mm-hmm. And then after that, when you get to know me a bit more, then I'm able to tell you the truth. Obviously, all my friends, my coworkers, they know. And it's important for me to at least have that circle of trust where I can also share the good and the bad, obviously. When I got married, we had a recording done of his speech because he couldn't be present. I mean, the toughest part is him never not being there. We've been creative because we had 5 minute phone calls when we were kids per week, per person. So it was, let's say, if I was using the 5 minutes, it was me this week, next week it was my youngest sister, and the week after it was my mom. So instead of just writing letters, we started doing recordings, audio recordings, video recordings, and we would send each other recordings so we can have more than 5 minutes, and also we can have more than just a written text. And so we did that for the longest time. As I said, since 2008, we've been able to go visit him. The first time in 2008 was me visiting him in prison. And don't forget, I hadn't seen him. The last time I had seen him was at 10 years old, and now I go at 20 years old. So it's a grown-up man that he has in front of him. And in a way, he's not a stranger, because as I said, we've kept communication going. But it's among the biggest challenges that I've had to go back in 2008 and meet my dad for the first time. And I had a lot of questions, which he answered all of them. I wanted to know more about him, his side of the family. And I came back and I was completely lost when I came back. I didn't know what I wanted to do anymore. I was all confused. I was angry.
Yes.
I didn't find it right. You know, you meet your dad in jail. There's a warden who's trying to, to show his power, right? I think yes. Anybody who's been in jail understands what the dynamic is. And also, every single time we go, it's a nice experience. We're happy. And every time we leave is a tougher experience, especially this year when we all went to see him and left him knowing that he's fighting, he's battling cancer. Right now, he's all alone.
And it's also 10th anniversary of his 10 years since he was acquitted. Yes, by the way, exactly. For you as a young adult, you had to deal with this matter of not wishing to discuss the situation your father basically wrongfully accused, but it must have been a kind of an exulting feeling and tremendous hope and pleasure when you learned, okay, he's acquitted, which should have been the end of the story. He should have gone home with you in 2011. Pardon me, 20. I got the right date. Yes.
Yes, 2011. In 2011, yes. I'm always grateful for my dad and his lawyer to have taken that fight, because it wasn't easy. I don't think anybody have to assume it was an easy fight. When you're being accused and you have to listen to hours of witnesses lying on the stand, and you have to defend yourself. Mm-hmm. And we have to always say that my dad was 100% acquitted, fully acquitted, based on alibi. He was not where people said that he was. That's when you see that a lot of these charges were all made up.
How far people would go to keep him in prison.
He had to find, people would say, we saw you at this location in the country, and my dad would find a witness where he was, because as a foreign affairs minister, he was going over the globe, the world, trying to find support and help. So he was outside the country trying to get any help he could in order to prevent the war.
Yes, I think that's very important part of his story. He was a peacemaker, and no one rebutted that either. They tried to portray him otherwise, but he was clearly a peacemaker.
He was. And 3 months of his political life ended up stealing 23 years of his life of freedom. I think when you put it in proportion, I don't understand how that can even fit into any kind of equation. But I still tell myself, you know what? You're 33 years old, Cedric, you have to fight, because if you don't, then who will?
Yeah, life is fragile.
Life is fragile.
Yes. We're speaking to Cedric Bitchman-Parker, son of Jerome Bitchman-Parker, who was acquitted in 2011. And Cedric, what kind of things can we do? What is your family and other and lawyers and others asking people to do? And I think everybody should pitch in. So please tell us.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think we want Canada to take responsibility by allowing an innocent man, who is my father in this case, to join us in Canada. Now, how? What can people concretely do is, they need to contact their MPs at the different government levels, like at the federal levels. But mainly, we want the Minister of Public Safety, which is Marco Mendicino, to give my father permission to set foot in Canada. Mm-hmm. He's the only one with the power to give the right.
So again, his name and his title
is the Public Safety of Canada, Minister of Public Safety of Canada, mm-hmm. and is the Honorable Marco E.L. Mendicino.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And that is the principle. That's the main. You would urge Canadians who want to see justice to begin with writing to and speaking perhaps to their MPs and others about the minister's need to do the right thing, right?
Yes. We need help to. We haven't heard from them. We sent them a letter in 2018 and we're in end of 2021, almost 2022. And nobody has responded to us. I think right now we're fighting two big beasts, which is the way I shall look at it is I'm a young man, 33 years old, who's supposed to have his life in front of him. I have a father who's battling cancer who's about to lose all his privilege in a matter of deadline is December 22nd. He's losing all his privileges. And we have the federal government in Canada, and we have the UN, both of them, which we're trying to have them to act upon their responsibilities that they agreed on.
Yes.
And the only way to do it for me is to have support by my fellow Canadians to help me by getting more journalists to speak up. We always say media journalism is the fourth power, and I believe in it. And also to have our ministers, our MPs, to speak up on their behalf to say this cannot be accepted, that a Canadian citizen who's working, who's doing what he has to do, who's been here for 23 years, cannot be reunited with his father, who is an innocent man.
Yes, there's a famous court. It's called the Court of Public Opinion, and we need public to speak up.
Yes.
Cedric Bitchman-Parker, I believe in your father's cause very much, and I won't hide the fact. I think it's very important that Canada showed that it actually believes in justice and due process and returns your father to your family. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you, Phil, for having me. And thank you. We need more people like you to speak up.
Yeah. Well, we're going to keep following the case. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. And we'll be back with more later.